Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, August 18th, 2010. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Hearing set for Friday in Grangeville on ConocoPhillips giant oil component loads. Ninth Circuit rules logging roads in the West must reduce mud in salmon streams. And Southern Idaho farmers upset over ban on Monsanto's genetically modified sugar beets. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Second District Judge John Bradbury has scheduled a hearing on a motion for a preliminary injunction against the ConocoPhillips oil component shipment for Friday morning at 9 in Grangeville. Bradbury yesterday issued a temporary restraining order against the Idaho Transportation Department, preventing them from issuing a permit to allow the shipments. Bradbury required the plaintiffs in the lawsuit against the ITD, North Central Idaho tourism business owners Linwood Laffey, Borg Hendrickson, and Peter Grubb to post a $3,000 bond to cover potential costs to the ITD in case the restraining order, quote, has been improvidently issued. Advocates of the West attorney Laird Lucas, who is representing the plaintiffs pro bono, said, "This is right. A judge is taking this seriously. We wish the Department of Transportation had taken it as seriously as the courts are." Governor C.L. Butch Otter told the Spokesman Review Tuesday of the 207 ExxonMobil loads, quote, "I see it as potential economic development, but I also see it as having done everything right as a demonstration that we can do those kinds of things, and that port, being 400 miles inland, is extremely valuable. That, of course, then is good for Lewiston and therefore good for the state." In related news, the Idaho Transportation Board is scheduled to meet in Coeur d'Alene tomorrow, and it will decide if it should increase fees for oversized trucks after discovering the current fees don't cover the department's administrative costs. The fees would be increased by as much as $35 per truck. Under the current fee structure, the giant ConocoPhillips and ExxonMobil loads would have a $1,000 fee each for transport over U.S. Highway 12. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled in a lawsuit against the Oregon Department of Forestry yesterday that mud from logging roads is considered pollution when it reaches streams with salmon, and ordered the Environmental Protection Agency to write regulations reducing the mud. Although the lawsuit by the Northwest Environmental Defense Center in Portland only concerned two logging roads in the Tillamook State Forest in northwestern Oregon, the ruling sets a legal precedent in the Ninth Circuit states of Idaho, Washington, Oregon, Montana, California, Arizona, and Nevada. Because of the ruling, logging roads in those states will eventually have to be improved to bring them into compliance with federal Clean Water Act standards. Mark Riskadal of the Northwest Environmental Defense Center said, "Those roads historically have gotten a free pass. This is not rocket science. There are some very low-cost, low-maintenance steps folks can take to remedy this problem." Andy Stahl of Forest Service Employees for Environmental Ethics says, "Since the ruling only applies to logging roads, there will likely be more litigation on the issue since most national forest roads are now used for recreation and other non-logging purposes." The Environmental Protection Agency has extended the comment period for the next phase of the Superfund cleanup in the Silver Valley. The new deadline for public comments will be Tuesday, November 23rd. The 45-day comment period was going to end next week, but members of the public meeting in Kellogg last week and U.S. Senator Michael Crapo asked the EPA to extend the deadline because the cleanup plan is 2,000 pages long. The new cleanup phase focuses on water quality and will include piping polluted water to impoundment areas. Critics say the plan includes little spending on heavy metal blood tests for those living in the Silver Valley. Idaho sugar beet growers are complaining that a federal judge's decision Friday banning the planting of new genetically modified sugar beet crops will hurt them because there aren't enough non-GMO seeds available for next year's crop. Federal District Judge Jeffrey White of San Francisco revoked the Department of Agriculture's approval of Monsanto's Roundup Ready genetically modified sugar beets until the department can do more testing on the crop's safety. Meridian farmer Drew Eggers told the Associated Press, "I'm really concerned because I really don't think it's possible to go back to the conventional way of raising sugar beets." Eggers has grown sugar beets for 33 years and currently has 100 acres of the plant. Canyon County farmer Sid Freeman said, There's not enough seed available in the non-GMO varieties to plant all the acres that would be put into sugar beets. The ruling comes in a two-year-old lawsuit against Monsanto by Organic Seed Alliance, the Center for Food Safety, and the Sierra Club, which contend wind-blown sugar beet pollen in Oregon's Willamette Valley can contaminate nearby table beet and chard crops. A European Union study from 2001 mentioned in the lawsuit says sugar beet pollen can travel as much as 5 miles from its source. Oregon requires a 3-mile buffer between genetically modified and non-GMO fields. Center for Food Safety Executive Director Andrew Kimbrell said after Friday's ruling, "Hopefully the agency will learn that their mandate is to protect farmers, consumers, and the environment, and not the bottom line of corporations such as Monsanto." Sugar beets account for half of the U.S. sugar supply and are routinely used in processed foods. 95% of the sugar beets grown in the U.S. are genetically modified. In his 10-page ruling, Judge White was unsympathetic to arguments that there aren't enough heirloom non-GMO sugar beet seeds available for next year's crop. White wrote, "The Department of Agriculture, quote, has already had more than sufficient time to take interim measures, but failed to act expediently. The USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Services will be in charge of deciding whether future plantings of GMO sugar beets are legal under Judge White's injunction. Ada County prosecutors are charging a Boise mother with felony injury to a child for leaving her 7-year-old son alone for 5 hours at a concert. Police say Angie A. Ammerman left her son alone at the Boise Music Festival, which featured performances by Bret Michaels and the Backstreet Boys, so she could go to the front of the crowd of 50,000 to dance and get autographs. News accounts do not indicate how the boy was injured. A preliminary hearing in the case is scheduled for Friday, September 3rd. A crop-dusting plane crashed near Genesee this morning, but there were no injuries. 40-year-old pilot Peter Fountain of Genesee walked away from his heavily damaged 1979 single-engine Gulfstream AMG-164B, which he crashed at about 7:40 a.m. At Monday's Moscow City Council meeting, the council gave final passage to a resolution to reduce the city government's greenhouse gas emissions by 20% of 2005 levels by the year 2020. City Supervisor Gary Riedner presented the resolution.
Council meeting, the council received that greenhouse gas reduction policy, if you will, and indicated they agreed with the report and the reduction targets of 20% of our 2005 levels. What you see before you is the embodiment of the instruction of the council to develop a resolution. Since it is a policy, then a resolution is the appropriate way to put it into effect. So we prepared this resolution, would ask you to consider it and put the greenhouse gas reductions that you previously approved into effect.
The council voted unanimously to approve the resolution. Voters in Genesee approved a 5-year, $40,000 plant facilities levy yesterday, with 52% of the school district patrons voting in favor. Among the projects the levy will pay for is replacing a leaking gym roof, new facades for the school, and new sidewalks. As expected, incumbent Democrat United States Senator Patty Murray and Republican challenger Dino Rossi are leading in the primary race in Washington state. They will face off in the November general election. With late ballots sent before midnight last night still coming in, Rossi was behind Murray in a field of more than a dozen candidates, but well ahead of fellow Republican Clint Didier, a former NFL player and present-day farmer and favorite of the Tea Party constituency. Under the primary Washington system, the top two vote-getters advance to November's election. Even though votes have just been counted, Murray and Rossi had already begun campaigning against each other. Murray cites her experience and clout as the reasons why she is the ideal candidate. Rossi claims that Murray has failed to bring federal dollars to Washington state when they are needed the most. As of early this morning, Republican and 5th District Member of Congress Kathy McMorris Rogers of Kettle Falls has more votes than the combined totals of the four Democrats and one Constitution Party member who challenged her. McMorris Rogers has 72,500 votes, and former Spokane newscaster Daryl Romaine was second with 14,300 votes in the sprawling district that runs from the Oregon state line to the Canadian border. Democrat Barbara Lampert of Spokane was third with 11,400 votes, and Clyde Cordero, who was recruited by the Democratic Party early when it looked like nobody else from the party would challenge McMorris Rogers, was fourth with 6,950 votes. So Romaine will take on McMorris Rogers in November's election. There were two candidates in the 9th District Legislative House race for the seat held by Republican Joe Schmick of Colfax, so the primary race simply served as a dry run for the general election. Schmick had 82% of the vote, while Republican Glenn Stockwell of Richville, who ran as a Democrat in a previous race for the seat, had 18%. Whitman County Auditor Eunice Coker had 78% of the vote in her re-election bid, and challenger Esther Wilson had 22%. With school starting in less than a week, University of Idaho officials are still trying to determine the cause of a broken pipe that left the basement of the J.A. Albertson building flooded at the end of June. University of Idaho Risk Management Officer Nancy Spink said that the cause of the break is still unknown. Spink told the Moscow Pullman Daily News, because of our special situation of being a university building, all the parties agreed to simply focus on the restoration and continue the process of trying to determine the cause. There has been no determination of cause at this point. However, University of Idaho President Dwayne Nellis told the Daily News the cause of the leak was due to contractor error and that the contractors have insurance to cover the cost of repairs. Until the exact cause of the leak is determined, the university is continuing to make repairs and assess the situation. This fall, middle schoolers in the state of Idaho will have a little bit more responsibility and obligation to pass their classes. Under new rules, if 7th and 8th grade students fail to complete at least 80% of their courses with a passing grade, they will not advance to the next grade. Previously, middle school students did not have to pass any classes to move ahead. Deputy Superintendent for the State Department of Education, Rob Sauer, said, "Students understand that middle level doesn't count. Now they can say, I have some responsibility in this." The change in policy comes from a recommendation from a 2007 task force to help improve Idaho middle schools. Idaho County Commissioners are considering challenging a federal judge's ruling that placed wolves back under federal protection in the states of Idaho and Montana. Idaho County Commissioners Skip Brandt, Jim Radar, and James Rockwell say they support the Idaho Department of Fish and Game in their quest to regain full management authority over wolves. Brandt, Radar, and Rockwell met with Idaho County Attorney Kirk McGregor yesterday to discuss what legal actions they can take. Brandt said regarding U.S. Federal Judge Donald Malloy, who made the ruling protecting wolves, quote, He's legislating from the bench, which shouldn't be permitted. Commissioners say options include petitioning the court to become a party, challenging the Endangered Species Act, or sending a disaster declaration to Governor C.L. Butch Otter. And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service. 20% chance of isolated showers and thunderstorms before midnight, otherwise mostly cloudy, gradually becoming clear, low 51. Sunny tomorrow, high 82, west winds 5 to 15 miles an hour, gusts up to 25. Clear skies, low 49 Thursday night, west wind 10 to 15, gusts up to 20. Sunny on Friday, high 81, partly cloudy Friday night, 48 for the low, mostly sunny Saturday, high 82, and a 20% chance of showers each day part Saturday night, Sunday, and Sunday night, with a low 48 Saturday night, high 75 Sunday, 44 for the low Sunday night. Otherwise, mostly cloudy, those three day parts, and mostly sunny on Monday, high 76. Currently, fair skies, 85 degrees in Moscow. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next is Building Bridges, your weekly labor report from Pacifica Radio, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine, also from Pacifica Radio, at 6:30. At 7:30, the Susan Austin Show's in here at KRFP Moscow. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. Remember, every edition of the KRFP Evening Report is available online at the Radio Free Moscow website. This is KRFP Moscow.